G'day, Kennedy Malloy podcasters. Not long now till the return. Fresh new Kennedy Malloys to drive you home Tuesday after Easter. I don't know whether you caught the last podcast we did, which was a bunch of great comedians. This is part two with even more of the greats, including Ben Elton in for a chat, Tom Gleeson, Ursula Carlson, and first up, a guy who supported Jim Jefferies twice. I saw him a few years back and the last tour as well. Funny bugger, the great Amos Gill.
Like most stand-up comedians, Amos Gill has had many jobs, working on breakfast radio and for the Adelaide Crows Footy Club. And then there are the stranger gigs.
I hosted the girlfriend magazine Teen Model Search. Do you want me to judge the hottest 13 or 14-year-old girl, do you? Get f***ing right.
And between all that, he was maintaining a relationship over long distance.
Relationship was a lot like Bitcoin. Mostly online, very unstable, and no one knew how to f*** worked. I called her the NBN because she promised a lot and didn't deliver.
And he's been trying to stay healthy.
See, a lot of people looking at me right now going, geez, Jon Snow's got fat, hasn't he?
Just back from living in the USA with Jim Jefferies. Boy, there'd be some stories there. Would you please welcome Amos Gill.
Now, very funny, but why the potty mouth?
I mean, is that trashy?
You can't just say a joke these days without swearing.
That's why I don't get on the gala, mate. Right? Melbourne doesn't stand for that sort of stuff. You need to wear a sweater and be very polite.
How are you, Amos? Great to see you. Thanks for swinging by. We almost didn't get you. You were scheduled to come in a couple of days ago, and then you got the emergency call. What was it? You got into a gig?
I'm going to be honest with you guys. I took the cash.
We understand. Well, a young up-and-coming, yeah.
When I got booted off the breakfast radio, I decided the bank wasn't aware of my circumstances, and they said I still need to pay the mortgage.
Yes.
So when the AWU asked me to come to the Gold Coast, hello, big union money, they said, come do some stand-up. I booked in a while ago, and I forgot we'd booked this in, and I chose them. And
well, that's all right.
I mean, you've given me a free cut and draft.
How did it go? How was the gig?
I was pretty nervous because they were like, you know, you've got to be quite PC here, you know, because they've got political ties. And then an hour before the gig, I get a call and they said, look, Bill Shorten and Wayne Swan, a few of the heavies from the Labor Party here, and they want to keep it pretty tidy tonight. So we've just looked over your material and how about we just give you the cash and you go to the cass?
So you go to the casino.
I just went to the casino.
That's a win-win, I call that. That's fantastic, mate. Hey, I saw you. I had the pleasure of seeing you at the tennis center with Jim Jefferies. That was one of the great nights of comedy and Australian comedy in particular. Just we won't dwell on it, but what kind of buzz was it? It was 15,000 people. You step on stage. How'd you feel? One man, a microphone, no band.
It was
no backup singers.
It was the biggest one we've. Both of us, I reckon, we were back there because we did Madison Square Garden 4 months before, and that was big. But Madison Square Garden was actually really trashy. Like, Cheetos backstage. That was it in a paper cup. Like, it actually isn't that nice. Like, it's talked about as the best. But Rod Laver was one.
I saw Bill Maher there, so it's a great place to watch.
Great place to watch. A great like feeling. But when you're from Australia, you know, Rod Laver is pretty special.
You're pretty bloody mate.
Then there was the heckler.
Good Lord.
And then there was Mikko coming in here trying to get as many frothies as he could.
Mate, I have stormed backstage. Do you know who I am? Kicked over a couple of tables. Punched on with Michael Gudinski, who I'm guessing would have no memory of the evening. He'd just flown in from France.
It was actually funny because he brings Jim out. And he wants him to do the gun control routine all the time. That's what made him love Jim and bring him back originally. And Jim's like, well, it was 4 years ago. And then just as we're walking out, there's like 14,000 people. Gudinski goes straight over to Jim and goes, just give him the bloody guns. All the bands through the hits. Bloody Guns N' Roses are doing Welcome to the Jungle. What are you better than Guns N' Roses?
It was a fantastic night. And I love the midget too. And I can call him midget because he could refer to himself.
Yes, Brady Williams.
Brad Williams.
That was just laugh out loud, cry with laughter, funny. Top shelf. And are you having fun on the road with Jim?
We finished the tour and then he's back in the States now and I'm going to head back
So it's a big deal, I think. I mean, I hear you saying that you perform in the States, you've just dropped the Madison Square Garden. But what are the differences between the audiences?
The Australians, look, we're pretty hard. Like, we're not forthcoming with the emotion, you know. Aussie blokes like to sit there with the arms crossed.
And the silent laugh.
Yeah, but they even look at you like, what are you, look at this bloke with his microphone term. What an arrogant asshole.
Why is he so good? Why does he think he's so good?
Whereas America just have, like, the clap. Like, jokes get claps and words.
And also a bit of respect for the performer, perhaps, you know, a bit more, do you think?
But even culturally, that's what I'm struggling with. I'm from country South Australia, okay? So you can't say anything. anything good about your life, can you? Like, just as an Aussie,
shout out to all our people listening in SA right now.
Like, it's just like Aussie culture. You're a bit of a fool,
yeah,
or a tool. If
I
you,
know
you
what
know.
You're saying.
So Americans, when I got there, I couldn't make any mates because I just thought they were all douches. Because you'd be like, "How are you?" And they're like, "Dude, great. Last night was fantastic. Yeah. This hot girl asked for my number," and you're like, "Well, you're a wanker." And then they say to you, "How are you?" And you go, "Not bad." Like, that's what we're trying to say. Yeah, and they're like, "Oh no, do you need my therapist's number?" Or
yeah, good one, Debbie Downer.
But then I've come back, so I was there for 6 months, and then I've come back to Australia and I've picked up some of their mannerisms.
Oh no, you're a bit too enthusiastic, are you?
Yeah. So if people go, "How are you?" I go, "Great," and they're like, "Wanker." Or even if you say something bad, you go, "Oh, not too good." Everyone's like, "Well, wasn't prepared for that."
She's thrown us a curveball. Do you miss your family? Or do you catch up with them?
Oh, well, this show is actually about my mum leaving me when I was 12, so thanks for doing your research. No, it is a nice story about that, but it is about, like,
mum. Leave me when you're 12. That sounds like a feel-good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a TED Talky kind of thing, but it is. It's about her meeting a rich guy and then, like, going to live in Perth.
Okay.
And then that relationship collapsing. But
wow.
But along the way, it's mainly just dick jokes, to be perfectly honest. But in Melbourne, you have to do this wanky, like, "And then I learned a lesson." Fade to black.
Have you got a moral?
Really?
Yeah,
we don't need any lessons in our conversations, Amos. That's not fair. I imagine, though, working in the States and the celebrity world, you know, I've just heard that Kim Kardashian is apparently going to study to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that, please?
I think...
You're a lawyer. Are you about to become a lawyer?
I'm graduating May 6th. 10 years.
Wow. Jeez.
This is an admission I probably shouldn't make, but I finished it off while I was in America remote. I paid a friend $1,000 to do my last assignment. That cost me my degree.
No, you'll be like lawyer.
Well,
X.
It is. I'm just saying, it's
delegating.
It's a little Felicity
Huffman. To the Australians overseas, do you hang out together? Do you form your own little clique? Do you
absolutely.
Know
all,
in the West Hollywood gang?
There's Hugh Jackman.
Well, not those
ones. He's in New York, man.
Russell Crowe.
It's more people from Neighbours who haven't, you know, who haven't cut it yet. There's a struggling actor society. There is a group called Australians in LA, and we go and watch the footy and whatnot. And like,
good for you.
So that's not bad. I want to tell a story about an Australian who came to one of the shows.
Yes.
So when we did the tour, I said before the Rod Laver Arena one, you were the big star that came, and I was very stoked to see because, you know, Crackerjack, one of the great
things
as I was growing up. You know, love Malloy.
Boys are wonderful.
Yeah.
After Madison Square Garden, there was a man who came by the name of Russell Crowe.
Oh, yes, we know that.
Chat. Now, I was very excited to see him because I needed to make amends for the first time we met.
Uh-oh.
He'd come to a place called the Troubadour Theatre in LA to watch a band, and he loves his country music, and it's a country music place. And I was there with Michael Gudinski and Jim, and we had had a few drinks, and we'd been told Russell was coming because he loves Jim. Yeah, and I think he likes Michael because he wants another record. Wants a bit more of 30
Keep
foot of grunt. So he's going to come in, and he does. And Jim and Michael are busy, and so it's just me at the bar, and Russell's with his agent, and he's like his best friend, this Texas bloke. And I go, "I'm just going to bolt over and have a chat. I just need to tell the gladiator I love him."
That seems like a nice thing to do.
Good on you, mate.
Already, first mistake, he's in a yarn. Okay, so
he's
I'm interrupting.
Mid-yarn.
He's mid-yarn.
Okay.
But I've got something up my back pocket because I know his private jet pilot because he was an Air Force pilot and his son went to my school.
All right.
And so I go,
"That's your in."
That's me in. So I just barge straight in. No hello. Okay, g'day, Russ. My best friend's dad's your private jet pilot. And as soon as I've said it, I'm like, it's boring. But to me, it's huge.
It's kind of,
So Russell just looks at the American bloke and goes, "Do we know who he's talking about?" And the American goes, "Yeah, Russ, Rick, the red-headed guy. Great, great, great dude. Remember we played like hockey right. with him on the back of the plane?" And then Russell goes, "Cool, you guys talk about him." And he just buckers off. So then I'm just left with the agent, and there's like a pause, and he goes, "So he is a nice fella, ain't he?" And I go, "I don't want to talk about him with you." Like,
I don't want to talk about
him. Are you for real?
It was my in with Russ. Like, who are you, mate?
Please tell me you've since caught up with Russell since then.
So after the Madison Square Garden gig, he came up and he gave me the thumbs
gave
up.
Gave me the thumbs up.
And he goes, "He was terrific, mate." And still I was like, "So I know your pilot." Like, get rid of that story, Amos. It's not interesting.
Let it go, man. Let it go.
This is the best of Kennedy Malloy. And please remember, the best is a relative term.
Last time we caught up with Ursula Carlson, we found out all the ways she's been using her time. She's taken up golf.
I didn't realise I was a middle-aged white guy, but apparently I am.
She's been desperately trying to make sense of Marie Kondo's clothes folding techniques.
There's a big flaw in there, because if you're a bigger unit, you cannot try fold. Because then it just doesn't look like you've rubbled up a two-man tent.
And she's been training for celebrity boxing matches.
You should box on with Manu.
Manu from My Kitchen Rules.
Yeah, I can fight him.
If you have to fight a chef, I'd rather him than George Colombaris. He is genuinely punchy.
Let's find out what she's up to now. Please welcome back Ursula Carlson.
Hello.
We're thrilled to have you back.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's amazing to be back. And I just packed my suitcase coming over, the Marie Kondo
The Marie Kondo way.
Yeah, brought two T-shirts and a pair of knickers. So.
You're good to go.
Yeah.
I have a feeling she's going to sort of drop off the radar in a minute. I think she was sort of a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those shows.
Like, who cares?
When you watch those hoarder shows, you kind of watch it to feel better about the fact that you don't vacuum as often as other people. You go, I'm not that bad. Sure, I only do the washing. Once a month.
I agree.
But,
it made me feel good. And I'm just thinking something's going to be revealed. She's a big fat fake. Well, big skinny fake, actually. Yeah. She's this too perfect. Yeah. We're going to hear really dark stories come out about
about what? She's got
other people's fingernails and chewing it.
There's going to be something dark.
Now, listen to that opening. You're very sporty. So you took up golf. Yes. You're contemplating boxing.
Yeah. I've played tennis with Serena Williams.
Oh, wow.
There's a clip on my Facebook. Yes.
You're very confident in the way you're answering this.
Yeah, I am. If you play tennis with Serena Williams and she says to you, you've got a great forearm, you go with that.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Like, I never have to go to the gym because I have that.
How did that happen? Intrigued.
When we had the earthquakes, the Kaikoura earthquakes 2.5 years ago, we did a fundraiser and her and her sister and Kornikova, did a fundraiser.
Fantastic.
And I hosted it and then I played with her against her sister and Kornikova a doubles match and I hit the winning shot and she goes, you've got an amazing forearm. And then she hugged me and I had a little tear.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, that was a win-win all round. Yeah. And now I hear you taking up, you're going to parachute.
I heard you
were going to jump out of a plane.
Skydiving what?
Look.
Skydiving.
I was hoping this wouldn't come up. I asked my publicist not to mention this. I wanted to skydive in Melbourne because I'm really scared of heights and I thought this would be a great way to, you know, sort of overcome that. And then set the whole thing up and then they go, and we'll weigh you just before you go.
Yes.
I went, sorry, just back up a minute there. Oh. What did you say?
What?
Yeah.
They weigh you before you skydive.
Off.
Because they tandem, they strap you to another person.
Get a really small person to strap to you.
You know how small they're going to have to be? I'm going to have to tandem with a 5-year-old. So I was like, okay, wait. So now you know what I weigh? They go, yeah, and then we write it on your hand.
No.
I went, no. I don't need anyone to write my weight on my hand with a Sharpie. Now for the next 3 days, everyone goes, whose phone number is that? No.
I'm with you. And you know what? Guys don't seem to care about that stuff. Yeah. It's like, oh, whatever. No one's thinking of us chicks. I can't stand
it. It's for safety reasons, Jade.
Oh, now, safety.
When I was in your neck of the woods, or when I was in Queenstown, I did the same thing. So very late in the day and after a couple, me and my brother decided, why don't we go and do one of those tandem parachutes where you run off the side of a cliff and you're in the air. So we turned up. It was in the day and there's all these blokes sitting around and they looked at us and went, phew. Jeez. and called two blokes who were like the size of jockeys
to come out. Go with you.
And I'll never forget this. He's going, oh, mate, there's not a lot of wind. He said, we're really gonna have to run at this.
Wow.
And I'm going, what do you mean? Like there's some element of danger here. As we were running, he guys screaming, keep running, keep running. My feet go off the edge and I hear gravel go over and down into the river. It wasn't fun.
Okay, no. Me, they're combining two sports that I hate now, running and jumping off the side of a mountain.
Are afraid of heights, why don't you just go to one of those restaurants that's up really high and just sit by have a table seat?
I wanted to do that. And then last month in Sky City where they have that, the glass floor and the lookout cracked. The whole floor cracked. But the thing that scares me is that they've got signs everywhere that says, don't worry, the glass is just as strong as the concrete. Well, the glass just cracked. So what's happening with the concrete? Now I'm too scared to go anywhere near Sky Tower.
Are you bonkers? Now, apparently, you say you're quite a competitive
person.
Here
we go.
Yep.
And I'm
that's why losers. So yeah. Such a weird name for my show.
It is. I'm getting those vibes. The more I know you, I think, yeah, you've got that hunger. You've got that desire.
Yeah.
To win.
Yeah, well, and it's more than that because I've got a bit of mongrel too, so I'll fight you for it. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, all right, so on.
I'd like to see this.
Okay.
Stand by. I'd like to see the two
stand
of you
by
fighting.
For this one.
All right, here we go.
You've made an outrageous claim that I'm going to take you on about this one.
Bring it.
You reckon that you make the pork, the best pork belly going around.
Yeah. What's your question?
I'm going to take you down, bitch.
Bring it. You organise a kitchen and I'm there and I'll
it
bring
is
my
a
tickety cook-off,
mate. Because I make, I swear to God, I've cooked for so many of my friends and family. Mind you, I do ply them with lots of alcohol before.
She's a good cook. She's really.
But I've got to, I'm not even going to find out your recipe. I'm not going to give you any tips. We're going to have a cook-off. Yeah. Why is your pork so good?
All right, and I'll judge it then. All right.
Look at you giving up your time.
I know, it's so good.
What a legend. No, you know what? I mean, I'm sure you're a great cook.
Hey, that's slightly patronising.
Mine comes from the heart. Mine is love. You can't.
You are by the books. You are by the numbers.
I cook for my friends.
You're
very clinical. I feed them. I give them love.
You sound like you're on My Kitchen Rules now. Oh, I cook from the heart.
Yeah, look, I'll talk about my dead grandmother if I have to, mate. This is for my
children. What's the secret? What's the secret to a good pork belly?
Well, I do it the Italian way.
Oh, like a porchetta.
Yeah.
So I would have thought Asian.
It is moist.
Moist.
Yeah.
I like crispy.
Oh, yeah, no, the top is crispy.
Oh,
that,
yeah?
I do both, mate.
Oh, hey, now you're doing
top
both.
And moist the meat. So your brain goes, what's happening? Oh, it's a powerful taste explosion. That's what it is, mate. I
really feel like a pork belly right now.
It's called happiness.
Me too. I'm hungry.
So Asian would be good because they love the pig.
They do.
The pig is the king of it.
Do you know what I've said, though? I do have a lot of friends who say they can't cook. And I say, that's not true. You can cook. You don't want to. And
if you can read, you can cook.
Correct. And what I say is that for people who don't, you're missing out on something in life, which as you get older, you miss out on, is compliments.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, you cook for people. People go, that's really tasty. Thank you. You go, oh, I feel good about myself. It's one thing people forget. It's for free.
Yeah.
That's
but
sad.
It's a free compliment.
That's really sad.
If you're sad.
You need compliment. You cook so people show you thanks.
Friend,
what a sad, lonely woman.
Going through something, I get them to come over and we cook together.
See?
And what a beautiful experience.
It is a great experience.
Yeah, that and finger painting. you can't beat it.
I agree.
I feel the same way when I make my cheese and ham toasted sandwich.
Scott doesn't even have a freezer.
This is the best of Kennedy Malloy.
Tom Gleeson has already given us so much gold with hard quiz and hard chat, like this week with Anthony Kalia.
What's it like to be a ventriloquist doll come to life?
But he's been searching for a big idea to take on the might of maths.
Well, I have thought of maybe turning my show into a dating show called Hard Date.
Well, that would get things going, wouldn't it?
No, I take couples and I split them up. I get them in. Welcome to Hard Date. You two will not be together by the end of the show.
Please welcome back the hard man of comedy, Tom Gleeson.
Jeez. Does he get uncomfortable? Was Anthony Kalia when he looks at you?
I think he loves it.
Was he sitting on your knee at the time?
No, well,
he's got a very good sense of humour. I know him really well.
He's a good fella.
Well, I've always said hard chat is a beautiful combination of a masochist and a sadist coming together. It's symbiotic. I enjoy handing out the pain. He enjoyed receiving it.
Wonderful stuff. Now, how are you going in the comedy festival that's on in Melbourne at the moment? Congratulations to you. I've read some staggering reviews. I didn't realise they had that many stars. What's it out of? It's very good. Are you
happy
with how it's going? Because I know you've added shows. You've got to be doing well when you've added a whole week of shows.
Yeah, I put another week of shows on. And yeah, it's been great. I've been having so much fun doing the show. The comedy theatre is just beautifully set up.
Isn't it beautiful?
Go in there and you go crazy. And weird stuff has been happening at the shows. Like at the, my shows, one thing I do is at the end of the hour, I invite the audience to tell me what they didn't believe. And then I tell them what's true and what's not.
Oh, about your story. Okay. Yeah, your show's called Joy. That's
it's called Joy. Yeah. And then I get to the end. And so people just get to yell out what they didn't believe or they thought was bullshit.
You put a bit of mayo on it.
Yeah. And then we sort of churn through the show a second time. And then, but someone the other night, they just threw a dummy on stage. It's the weirdest thing.
A baby's dummy.
It's very unnerving. Wow. Like, I don't have babies anymore.
It is unnerving.
Yeah, because my youngest is four. And I'm like, I see a dummy because I picture a baby not with the dummy anymore.
A dummy spit.
What can you do with a dummy?
Well, the best I thought it was maybe that was it. Maybe it was like, implying, but they've spat the dummy.
That's right.
That doesn't make sense.
All I'm thinking is a weird threesome involving nappies and a dummy and you.
Well, someone yelled out.
Up there? Yeah. How did you get there from a dummy being thrown on?
Well, it's worse than that because someone yelled out, when are you going to pick up the dildo? And he said, sorry, I meant dummy. And I'm like, mate, if you are mixing up dildos and dummies, you have a baby with chipped teeth or a very unsatisfied wife.
Over the years, there's been some crazy stuff thrown on stage. It's like Tom Jones, famously, the underpants, which just got bigger and bigger as he got older.
Bloomers.
Bloomers. Boggy Y-front by the end of it.
Yeah.
There's been a bat, which had a bat and pigeons and all kinds of stuff.
Well, Shannon Knoll had a full tin of beer thrown at him, and he didn't react very well.
No, he wouldn't have known it had happened, by the way. He just silkily glided on. Now, when you're doing your shows, your stand-up, do you keep all your other stuff up in the air because you're doing TV at the moment?
Yes.
And what's your travel series? We've spoken about this.
Yes, I've got a travel show called Go Away. It's like Getaway, but I recommend places that people should never go. And I did Cairns, and Cairns, I haven't been back to Cairns since.
I wouldn't go. I'd give that a wide berth for a while. Well, Who's next?
Well, just early this week, I've shot a new episode and I went to Byron Bay. So that'll be on Charlie Pickering's show, The Weekly, next week.
Byron is a place you would not recommend for people to go in this country. I highly recommend never going there.
But it's tricky, though, because when I go there, people know why I'm there straight away. They're like, are you here for Go Away? Right. Yeah. And I went into a shop and they said, are you here for Go Away? And I'm like, yeah. And they said, are you paying out Byron Bay? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, fair enough. Gee, there's a lot of material. It's probably too much. And they're right. Is there any tickets you can give us?
Did you run into the famous locals?
Did you see a Hemsworth? Was there a Hemsworth sighting?
I didn't see any Hemsworths, unfortunately. I did go looking for them. I went to Nimbin.
Oh, yeah?
And I think you can hunt them now.
I was walking down the main street in Nimbin, and I did an introduction where I said, welcome to Nimbin, where it's extremely obvious straight away why half the name of Nimbin is Ben. And someone came out of a shop and they just yelled out, cut! Cut! Can we edit that out? We have to edit that out. I'm sick of people dumping on Nimbin. That's what they said. And I said, I hate to tell you, but I think the horse has bolted on Nimbin.
There's not much there. Is that what you're saying? Poor old Nimbin. Nimbin's Byron Bay, outrageous. Hey.
But you know what the coolest thing was? That when I went there was, I was just doing some jokes about shark attacks down at the beach. While we were just joking about it, we saw an actual shark.
Cue the shark.
There was a real shark just doing laps of the beach.
You can't argue with that.
Tom Gleason is with us. He's got a show called Joy, part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Been extended, Dave.
It has too. That's at the Comedy Theatre in Canberra in August at the Canberra Theatre. It's the Civic Square, London Circuit. Then in Sydney at the Opera House Concert Hall, 24th of August. You don't want to miss that either.
You're going to go away any of those towns, are you?
I reckon Sydney's on the list. I've done Melbourne. To be fair, I've done Melbourne, Cairns, Tamworth, Launceston, Byron Bay will be...
Where was the frostiest reception, do you think? Who do you think is seriously...
Oh, Lonnie was tough. Now, I reckon that was pretty hard.
Lonnie?
Launceston.
But the trick is, though, you've got to make it accurate. See, when it's accurate, you can't argue with it.
So what was your point? What was your overarching observation?
Hobart's better. I drank a Cascade in front of the Bogues Brewery, and that's the part that everyone really got angry about.
That's outrageous.
They said, look, we're all good sports in Launceston, but I reckon drinking the Cascade out the front of the Bogues Brewery, that was a step too far.
There was a story once at the Cascade Brewery where the chief brewer, the head brewer, was caught having a whiz on the side of the brewery, and they sacked him. And I'm going, surely that's proof he's doing his job. Yeah. You have to kind of snake around the corner.
Of course.
He would have got away with it, except he wrote his name in.
Hey, Tom, I love hearing when you're performing around doing shows of, do you get any other havoc from audiences? Because they're pretty diverse, I imagine, the people that are seeing you in different
groups. Who's coming to your show?
I do invite chaos into my shows because I like it to be a bit more, a bit of back and forth. I love it. And I did a late night show in Adelaide recently and I heard some people talking in the front row and I kind of let it go for a little bit. When they're talking.
That must be annoying.
Is it annoying?
Is it enough?
Is it enough to address?
The back row probably can't hear it, but it's just getting on my nerves. So eventually I just said, can you two just shut up? Right. Let's just shut up. All right. And the woman said, I'm sorry. I'm just explaining what you're doing to my blind friend.
Oh.
And I was like, oh.
No.
At first, I was confused too because I was like, they could be drunk. It was a late night show. You know? So, and I said, what do you mean? And they said, oh, well, sorry, my friend can't see. So I'm describing what you're doing so that she doesn't miss out on those bits of the show.
And she was blind.
Yeah. So what I do
How'd you go with that?
Well, I lean into it. That's what I do.
This is the start of your show, too.
Well, yeah, straight away.
Oh, great.
Well, I corrected them. I said, it's not blind, it's vision impaired. You are insulting your friend, your vision impaired friend. And you can still not be able to see and be an idiot, which is what you're doing.
It's funny when you do that. I got into a heckling duel with at the Comedy Store one day, and a bloke at the end of it, he goes, "Mate, I'm in a wheelchair." Oh. No, this is a true story. And I stopped for a second while the audience questioned. They go, "Yeah, that doesn't mean you still can't be a dickhead." which was my comeback to go harder.
Well, I feel like sometimes also the best way to be inclusive is to abuse people like I abuse everyone else. I didn't want to give them a soft ride.
No, that's right.
Because they would tell that they could tell that I wasn't giving them the full treatment.
That's right.
So to include them as a member of society, I abused them as much as I did. I gave them
that's
extra,
fair.
Actually.
That's fair.
Tom, how do you go with this last week on the weekly that you're on as well with Charlie Pickering? And how have you seen the last week politics-wise in Australia and the budget and all that hoo-ha with the surplus and the excitement?
Very nice.
What's going on with that?
I think I get very upset when we get excited about a surplus or even they're worried about a deficit because that's the huge political move in Australia, this whole thing about whether there's a surplus or a deficit. What they're talking about is balancing the books. That should just be ordinary background noise. That should just be basic doing your job.
Like, you don't get a lap of honour for balancing the books.
No, like you don't. You balance your household budget, and that's just called living. That's all that is. That's all it is. That's
I just
staying
thought it was
still.
A bit of carry on.
Yeah. Do your job.
Too much, you know.
And also, they talk about the service. They get very excited. Like it's not a business. You pay taxes to get services. So a surplus is like us all chipping in for pizza, and then the treasury goes down. Buys one and comes back and goes, "Hey, I've got $5 left over. Go and get some garlic bread, you dickhead. We want to eat it. Chipped in because we wanted to enjoy ourselves."
I agree.
This is the best of Kennedy Malloy and a few mediocre bits that managed to scrape through.
Ben Elton's comedy pedigree is unsurpassed, having written Blackadder and The Young Ones.
I think you did it on purpose because you know I've got a runny bottom.
And appearing on one known quite well on this show, Frontline, being interviewed by a very unimpressed Brooke Vandenberg.
Ben, well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, just warming up. Is
well,
it over?
Thank you, Ben. It's over. Oh. Thank you very much.
Ben's written plays and musicals like We Will Rock You and collabed with The Wiggles. Like our very own Dentist Jane.
I'm going to put my gloves on now. Ooh.
And his brand new 16th novel, Identity Crisis, could well be written about our Mickey. It features a grouchy old cop named Mick who doesn't understand the modern digital world.
Trying to tiptoe his way through this blizzard of hashtags while trying not to give offence.
Would you please welcome a comedy icon, Ben Elton.
Sir Ben or Ben Elton? Is it? Can you answer this, please?
The Marquis of
I'm
Elton.
I'm certainly not a Marquis or Marchioness. I've never been offered anything. I think they think I'd probably turn it down. That's my thought. Frankly, after they knighted Baldrick, I thought the currency has been debased. With deepest respect to Tony, who love,
but
you should have seen Rowan's face when he got the news. Because honestly, the fact that Baldrick got knighted before Blackadder was just stunningly great karma. I felt it was like a queen definitely has a sense of humour.
Well, mentioning Blackadder, I'm going to get to this. We are going to get to your brilliant book very soon. Yes. So calm the farm, everyone. But there was one of these polls taken today by Radio Times in England, which puts Blackadder at fourth on the list of most popular sitcoms of all time.
But what does it precede?
What does the British public know? They voted for Brexit. I mean,
well, we're pointing out it's very complimentary, Ben. Yeah. And number one was Fawlty Towers, Father Ted.
Yeah.
I'm Alan Partridge, Blackadder.
I would suggest
that perhaps Alan Partridge is not a sitcom.
Certainly, where's The Young Ones? And where's my latest one, Upstart Crow, which is brilliant.
Is it?
Well, let's give a shout out to that.
Exactly. Oh, well, that's about Shakespeare, starring David Mitchell. Mitchell. But
oh, fantastic!
Yeah, yeah, it's quite. It's been a lot of fun. But these polls, honestly, they had one about 10 years or 15 years ago, and Men Behaving Badly was number one. It's just what you know. Who knows?
Is there ever a chance we'll see another Blackadder series? Is there?
No, I don't think so. We're all still good friends, and the reason for that
is because there's not another Blackadder.
We don't do any more Blackadders. They're probably the time at which we were all least close to each other was when we were making out.
Did you ever get asked to, did the Americans ever ask to do an adaptation of one of your sitcoms?
Because
I've seen this before. Fawlty Towers, they famously made an adaptation of Fawlty Towers but decided the main character was too nasty.
Yes, no, that's famous.
So they made him nice. And then they went to do Ab Fab but decided to take out all the alcohol and drug references.
I think they're getting better at adapting. I think The American Office, for instance, worked pretty well.
Yeah. That's
we've never had a nibble. I mean, back in the 80s, there was no connection. I mean, honestly, it was... I went to the LA Comedy Store in 1987 when I was over there actually trying to develop a sitcom with the Fonz, Henry Winkler. Come on. But anyway, I was over there and I thought, I've got to get up and do a gig. And so I actually rang up and three of the comics that were on that night had been on my show Saturday Live, the precursor of the big gig.
Ripper.
You know, I was mates, and I was saying, look, I just thought maybe I'd come and do 5 minutes. I know some of the guys on tonight. Oh, how do you know? They were on my show. And the guy, this is true. He said, oh, so you're being in England, are you? I said, well, you know, I suppose I could actually say I was. He said, yeah, well, we had a guy in last night was big in Texas, and he was
terrible.
And that was that. We literally they weren't interested in English comics in those days.
Good
it's
Lord.
Great now with things like Ricky and Russell. Yep. Doing all the stuff over there, but it wasn't the case. Rick never got phoned. Rowan didn't.
Yeah.
It's the way it goes.
Thursday's a Blackadder to me.
It meant I got to come over here a lot.
Well, it did mean, which we've loved
You're
having you here for many years.
You mentioned The Young Ones, and to me, The Young Ones is just one of the greats. It's a game changer for me. I remember watching it at home on my own on a little black and white TV and going, what the hell is this?
Some of these people.
I've been waiting for this. And I must owe you royalties. I've got to come clean because a line I use a lot, all the time, without attribution, is let's ride to the gates of oblivion on a horse called Destiny, which was a line uttered by Rick Mayall.
Ride to the gates of oblivion on a horse called Destiny.
All right. And I can't help it. But whenever I get asked a question, I don't know the answer to.
Yeah. Well,
that's pretty much where I go.
Writing that sort of stuff was such good fun for Rick. You know, he was one of my dearest
Indeed.
Friends. I think of him often. It's now tinged with sadness, the memories of The Young Ones. Some of your audience will be too young to
not too bad.
They need an
broad.
Education here.
It's
Don't
nearly 40 years ago, so it's lovely to hear that it's still thought so highly of. Particularly, I like to think of adolescent Mick, with his little black and white TV alone in his room.
And who did you want to be in The Young Ones? Who was your most aspirational character?
There's a little bit of everyone.
Oh, he's a Vivian. Everyone. His microphone technique alone makes him a Vivian.
And the banging on the table, which he's prone to do a lot.
You were just mentioning, we were talking about this list of great sitcoms. You said, they're all 40 years old and they're all this. And you go, you make a good point, but it's been replaced by reality TV, hasn't it? Do you think in a strange way? Do you think?
No, I don't think it's been replaced.
They're making less of these.
Well, they make less of the traditional style comedies. Most of those on the list are studio comedies that were done with an audience. A lot of people think the laughter's canned. It's not. It's just recorded live, and it's a very different experience. I did a lecture about this on the BBC, actually, the Ronnie Barker Memorial Comedy Lecture I delivered a couple of years ago on the subject of a sort of
pardon me,
curious,
Your Majesty.
Yes, I know, better than a knighthood. on the curious snob. That surrounds kind of the idea that anything sort of done mockumentary style without a laughter track and is somehow proper comedy and that done with an audience. Anything that's trying to be funny, it's the biggest sneer. Oh, they're trying to be funny.
You.
But the fact is that if people weren't trying to be funny, there'd be no
there'd
fault
be nothing funny.
Of course they're trying to be funny. They're just trying to do it in a cool sort of hipster way.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah, being funny is hard, particularly when you've got an audience in front of you.
That's right. You don't die wondering. You don't have to get up and read the papers to find out how you went.
I mean, Blackadder got good, I have to say, when, I didn't do the first series, but the second series, which is where really Blackadder starts with Baldwin Stupid and Blackadder Bright. That was done in front of an audience. The first series was done on film, like a sort of movie comedy. Yes. But that's not what we do well in.
And the third series, of course, which is just the high water mark, with Hugh Laurie. That's
Hugh Laurie's Prince.
Who just is off the chain. Yeah. It's one of the great comic performances of all time. I mentioned that reality because you wrote a book based around a Big Brother.
About 15 years ago. Number one Britain, number one in Australia. What can I tell you?
It was incredible.
It was a murder mystery set in the Big Brother house.
Does this mean you had to sit through a lot of episodes of the show?
When it was interesting, yeah. I did. Yeah. I watched the second series in Britain and Australia.
Yeah.
And it was great in those days. No, it was fascinating telly.
It was great because they didn't let them do anything.
No.
They didn't give them tasks or projects. They sat there and bored the crap out of them.
But there was also no Instagram. There was no social media, so they didn't realise they would be going to become huge megastars for a minute.
But also, they didn't realise that the edit was going to construct completely different people to who they actually were. And that was what I was revealing in the book. And everyone knows it now. They're all playing for the edit. But at the time, they curiously thought that if they said something nice, it might get broadcast. No. Only if you say something horrible.
Listen up, sister.
Absolutely.
All right.
Can I talk through the book too? Because I'm saving it. I'm about to go on holiday, school holidays time. I'm going to go away with my twin boys. And I'm going to bunker myself down and read this book because everything about it appeals to me. And I've read many of your books, Ben, I have to say, and love them all.
Thank you. I love to see you thumbing through me.
Don't worry. I do it in bed. Late at night. Yes.
Shall I turn the lights down in the studio here?
Oh, look, we go way back. Now, you say no one's safe. You set up everything from the fake news culture. Now, extreme gender politics, which is big on our, I said it on my Twitter feed from some really annoying Australian male politicians mostly have something to say about that. Political sloganism and the power of the hashtag. Now about, I don't know, is it 8 years ago, 7 years ago, we wouldn't even know what the hashtag was. Right. Now I get in trouble if I say at home in front of my children, hashtag, that's scary. And they say, Mum, go away and stop trying to be cool.
That's mum speak. Definitely. I mean, what was cool yesterday, you can't, trying to keep up with young people's speak is absolutely impossible.
It is.
And as a parent, you realise, I reckon even Elvis, Lisa Marie would have said, dude, you're just not cool. I'm the king.
Yes.
How can you say I'm not cool?
So how's all that woven into this script?
Well, Identity Crisis is, it's a very modern, very zeitgeisty. I've spent the last 5 years doing historical novels, doing comedies about Shakespeare. This is the 21st century. It's about this cop who's a bit of a middle-aged dad man, as I indeed am myself. He's always thought he was on the side of the angels, quite radical, very much into an inclusive society, multicultural society. But suddenly realising, since things are moving so quickly, he's out of the loop. Things are changing quicker than he can. And in the meantime, he's investigating these murders that are based around identities. And of course, normally to a cop, your identity is your name, your age.
Yeah.
Correct.
But of course, these days, identity is an incredibly powerful force in society, and everybody's defining themselves by their sexuality, by their gender, by their religion, their race, what they eat. Are they a carnivore? Are they a vegan?
Don't mention the V word in this country at the moment.
Exactly. So many. Are you plus sized? Are you anorexic? Yeah. Everyone's got their own.
You strike me as pretty fluid.
Massively.
It's the world of labels, not using them.
Exactly. And he's completely confused. He's trying to investigate these murders, discovering that something about identity is in the case. Meanwhile, putting his foot in it constantly because, of course, the new language of identity is extremely hard to navigate and everybody is nervous of saying the wrong thing. And that's quite a corrosive thing socially. I mean, it makes people nervous. When people are nervous, they get resentful. When they get resentful, they get angry and then they vote for Brexit and Trump.
And that's
in a way partly what the book's about. Fantastic. It's an increasing age of outrage and it's a lot of laughs. It's a full-on satirical.
Is it hard writing a book in the age of emojis? Are you dumbing it down these days?
How do you do it in pictures? No, it's not. I don't know about emojis for novels. Well, imagine it. That'd be quite a good comedy book for Christmas, wouldn't it? Emojis.
One of those sold at the counter, perhaps. Boys as with
bowls
checker.
Of soup in front.
Have you ever used an emoji? You don't strike.
No,
me, so
I'm not a socially media person. Okay. I want to retain my sanity. I'm a writer. If I was on Twitter, I'd spend my life in an essay crisis trying to write one line bon mot. Also, apparently, everybody slags you off. And I've spent my life trying to avoid being slagged off. To me, going on Twitter is like saying, hey, every heckler in the country, I'm here.
Give me, kick me in the balls. Shoot.
Yeah.
Just line up and kick
best decision you've ever made, yeah. And never jump on board, I have to tell you. Will you stick around?
Because, oh, I'm loving it.
I'll tell you what, there's so many fans of yours in this country. Mm. And if you've got any question, anything you want to ask Ben, there's so many things you might want to touch.
Ask.
1-333-53. Ben is here. He's happy to have a chat. We've got lots of people. And here's something to think about when we come back. Kim Fisher has asked, will you be doing any more stand-up?
Oh,
Ben Elton, hold that thought.
This is the best of Kennedy Malloy.
Darren, you've got a question for the great Ben Elton.
Hmm? Yeah, g'day, Mick and Jane. Love your show, by the way. Just like to congratulate Ben. The Thin Blue Line, which you wrote with Rowan Atkinson. What a classic show that was.
I didn't write it with Rowan Atkinson. I wrote it for Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, okay. Well,
he couldn't write a gag if he did. All he can do is stutter.
They're obviously still good friends,
no,
Darren.
He's a genius performer, and he is a very close friend of mine. But no, I'm glad you love the Thin Blue Line. I was very disappointed not to see it in the top 20 of the British sitcoms, but as I say, their voting record in Britain is so tarnished now that I take it almost as a privilege that only one of my classic sitcoms was in the top 20 this time.
It's great to hear. Thanks, Darren.
Glad you love the Thin Blue Line.
Speaking of classic sitcoms, we've got two of them here. Hi, Daniel. Here's Ben for you.
Hi, Mick and Jane. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
Love the show. I'm just wondering if you hear stories about Robin Williams in, is it Morty, Mick and Morty or whatever it was. Did you guys use any recreational substances when you were writing?
Live on air. You heard it first on Kennedy Malloy.
I like the subtle way you said that.
Yeah, remember, there's a knighthood in the
Yeah, balance, I think Robin Williams has spoke very movingly about his struggles with addiction. Yes, there was one very, very definite recreational substance that we all used in those days, which was booze. You used to be able to booze at work. I mean, honestly, BBC culture in the early 80s, you went to the pub at lunchtime and had two or three pints. I love to drink still, and I'm an evangelist for the booze. I mean, honestly, I wish the blooming governments had stopped wagging their fingers at us, putting labels on, could harm an unborn child. I'm not going to give it to an unborn child. I'm going to drink it myself. And then this is the new one. They say, you might lose 2 years of your life.
Oh.
Yeah, which 2 years? The last two. I'm happy to lose those. Anyway, we used to.
There's your answer, Daniel.
I've never been interested in the illegal drugs. I like the legal ones too.
The legal ones are too good. Yeah. I have to say, most of my comedy has been powered by alcohol at some stage.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't drink at home, kids.
Okay. Don't drink.
Anyway. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how are you guys?
Yeah, good. What would you like to say?
Mate, going back to the young ones' days, Vivian had this fantasy or fetish about Felicity Kendall.
No, it wasn't Rick. It was Rick. It was Rick. Vivian hated hate the good life, and I hate it. Everyone in Britain's a lovable, middle-class eccentric, and I hate it. And then Rick said, well, you can blubbing well shut up, Vivian. If you've got something to say about Felicity Kendall, you can blubbing well say it to me. And that's from a very long time ago. And
memory.
I wrote that, and I'm very proud of it. And
personally have something for Felicity Kendall?
Of course, who didn't fancy see Flick Kendall? She was the most gorgeous.
Say Flick.
She was in Butterflies, wasn't she?
I know. That was Wendy Craig. No, it was a show called The Good Life.
I love that show.
Which was, she was a brilliant actress and also.
And a hot blonde, red. Yeah,
cracking
sort of,
easy on the eye.
Oh,
as they say.
Are
we allowed to even say that anymore?
Yes,
Jane?
we are.
I don't know in these PC days.
Ben, on our show, you're allowed to say anything you like, as we've both discovered.
The world's gone mad. You can't even give a harassed junior employer an overlong and creepy hug anymore. What's happened to the world?
I tell you, we get to the end of every show and heave a sigh of relief. Sometimes, Ben, you go, well, I appear to have got through another one unscathed.
I think we might go. I might just get on to my questions now, because I wanted to talk about We Will Rock You, which was one of the most successful musicals of all time, which you co-wrote, of course, with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
No. He wishes he hasn't had a hit like that since the 80s.
He hasn't.
Certainly not with me. I did write a musical with Andrew Lloyd Webber and it flopped.
Oh, did it? Oh, that was. Oh, I know which one that was. Was that Beautiful Game?
The Beautiful Game. Yes. But it didn't flop. It just, it was never going to be a massive. It was springtime for Hitler, basically, because it was about terrorism. It was about the genesis of a terrorist. It was a very serious musical about the Northern Ireland troubles in 1969. But We Will Rock You was a
We Will Rock You, of course.
Slightly more uplifting.
And, yes, and opened all over the world, and it's been so successful.
You're ahead of the curve. So everyone's gone Queen mad.
We were slagged to death. It was, apparently it was like almost a betrayal of supposedly being a bit of a cool lefty. That I did a musical, and a musical with Queen. I love musicals. I played the Artful Dodger twice as a child.
You're talking to the right people here, and Mick has been in musical
you
himself.
You do a good Fagin these days.
You do a good Fagin. Shut up and drink your gin.
But also it was the fact that you all already, Tug, because we all love Queen, and you saw how ripe it was to just celebrate the music of Queen, and well, now Bohemian Rhapsody.
I know, well, they've gone away now, but they were in a bit of a trough when they approached me. I mean, early 2000, we're back 1999 we started, and, you know, they said, let's do something with the greatest hits, and it was actually a time when it was, will this work, won't it work? I mean, they paid for it, risked a lot of money, but in the end, it all came back.
Oh, isn't that fantastic, though, because also it's great faith in yourself as well.
Yeah, it
Queen.
Was very, very, I was deeply proud to be asked. Very proud to be asked. They wanted it to be funny. I remember Brian and Roger saying to me, they say Freddie was always had a good laugh, and, you know, they've got a great sense of humour. People think Brian's this terribly serious guy, and sometimes he is, but he's also a brilliant laugh, as is Roger. We had a wonderful time.
That's wonderful.
Just quickly, stand-up. We mentioned stand-up. Yes. You're going to do it. You're very good at it.
Back on the road, first time in 15 years.
Oh, come
years.
On!
Yeah. 15 years.
Great to hear.
I've booked a UK tour for this autumn. I'm doing 70 dates in Britain.
Good
I haven't
Lord.
Written a script, so slightly squeaky trouser time. But I shall no doubt get there in the end. And then I'll be touring in Australia.
Permission
Australia.
To shout "Bravo" in an annoyingly loud manner. Permission granted. Bravo.
Well, we insist that you come back on the show when you're touring, and we will be the first to book seats. So everybody stand by.
Well, I would love to come back and plug the Jesus out of my
Excellent.
Doorway.
In the meantime, this is a page turner, if I don't say so myself. Ben Elton, Identity Crisis, a modern classic this is destined to be.
Well,
get on board.
It's,
Sir Ben Elton, you are, in my eyes, you've
Let
been
nice. Let me turn it down live on air. I reject your elevation.
This is the best of Kennedy Malloy.
Wow, what an honour to have Sir Ben Elton on the show, huh? Hey, stand by for those Aussie stand-up tour dates. If you haven't already, set the calendar appointment for your phone. April 23, the return of Kennedy Malloy, back with some brand new shows.